WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or delawarecounty.org. WIOX is supported by Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center on State Route 10 in Walton, open Tuesday through Saturday for disposal and recycling, reminding residents and long-term visitors, please wear a mask and observe 6-foot social distancing at the center. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center, hours of operation and information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800. WIOX is supported by Oakley's Wood-Fired Pizza and Grill on Route 28 in Arkville. Respecting social distancing with inside and outside table service Wednesday through Sunday. Soup, salad, sandwiches, burgers, wings, and of course, wood-fired pizza. Oakley's Wood-Fired Pizza and Grill, 845-586-3474. 845-586-3474.
Hi, this is Alan Reynolds, host of Pure Country, Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6, and the Pure Country Radio Truck Stop, Sunday nights from 10 till midnight on WIOX Roxbury. Serving New York's Catskills region at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable, Channel 20.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. And this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm fine. Fine.
Good. Well, we've getting some rain outside. I know the last time we talked, we didn't went through quite a little spell there without any rain.
Yeah, people's lawns are drying up a little bit.
Yeah, well, the grass finally slowed down, which was great for me anyway.
Yeah, it helps to have mulch around trees, that's for sure. This is when wood chips about 4 inches thick really help. So.
Yeah, keeps that moisture in the ground.
Yep. Absolutely.
What have you been up to in the forest?
I haven't been doing too much lately. Just finishing up tree saver programs, injecting ash trees. Got one more and maybe a few more, but we'll see. But that's about it. Not too much. Just, I planted some grapes.
I don't know.
Yeah, grapes are doing well this year with all this heat. A lot less diseases. I didn't know much about grapes. I still don't. But apparently, you shouldn't mulch grapes.
Why does that harbor?
They need
some
to heat
disease?
Up. The ground needs to heat up. So, I don't know.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, mulch does inhibit the ground heating up, especially in the late spring. You know, it's kind of like how they used to pack ice and sawdust.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, same thing with mulch in the ground. Grape really needs to feel the heat, I guess, so I'll try not doing that anymore.
Well, no, I don't know anything about grapes. Never tried, and I don't know.
Yeah, they're not too bad. I had some extra fencing from when I had my deer fence put up. High tensile woven wire. It had an awkward length, you know, like maybe a 10-foot length. So, you know what? I'm never going to use that for anything. So, I'll just use it for grapes to climb on. So, we'll see how it goes.
Cool.
Yeah.
And they're within a fence inside of your
defense?
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something you'll have to...
I've been having bear issues. Bears attacking my chickens, killed three of them, stole feed. They were caught red-handed. There's bear hair all in the coop. So it used to be, for the last, I've had chickens now since 2007, bears would just go after the feed, but now they go after both. So, in fact, keeping your chickens in a run might be worse at this point if you have bear issues. If you don't, then it's fine. Then, you know, it's probably better for fox and other predators. But if you have bear issues, well, no fence you make is going to stop them. And now they know where your chickens are. The chickens can't get away. So instead of killing 20, they'll only kill like 1 to 3 if they're free range. Because my neighbors had them penned in. It just peeled open the roof, tin roof, like a can opener. Killed them all.
Oh, my gosh.
Just killed them all. And then another guy, same thing, took out 40 chickens.
Wow.
At one fell swoop.
Yeah, I heard of that last year. There was an article on the Catskill Mountain News. Somebody happened to them as well.
Yeah.
So I guess it's becoming a problem, bear problems in the Catskills with chickens.
Well, you know, our ancestors would say, I told you so.
Guess there's a reason why they shot them, huh?
Domestic life and wildlife, you know, they can coincide in many ways, but sometimes they can't. And this is one example where, bears are a little more crafty. I mean, all the stuff I just mentioned about my deer fence. Deer are so much more predictable. I mean, you can put up a deer fence, and they're never going to try to get in if they know if it's built a certain way, you know. But bears, they can climb.
Yeah.
And they're a different animal, literally. So we'll see.
Well, hopefully those pesky bears never learn your deer fence.
Yeah, we'll see. And, you know, it's really bad for areas that are, if you're like an opening in the middle of the woods, that's worse, I find, with bears. You know, when we prune apple trees January through March, the people that have the most bear damage on their apple trees are people who live at the edge of a very large, large forest, you know, like big Catskill Forest Preserve land, a 50,000-acre parcel of land. Right. They just come right out of there and beat the crap out of those apple trees.
Yeah, and areas with open farmland are not nearly as bad, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I find anecdotally. But today's topic... It's going to be our four favorite trees, you know?
All right.
This is in no particular order. I don't like any one of these trees more than another, but that's what I'm going to go after. And, you know, I don't know. This really was easy for me to do, actually, to come up with four because I've thought about it because that's what we do. Let's think about trees. But, you know, there's all different reasons why, and it's actually changed since I've gotten older. There's ways I look at trees that is different than when I even looked at them 10 years ago. So some of it's a memory or it's nostalgia or something more recent, like tree climbing. That changes the way I've looked at trees that I just didn't 10 years ago, you know?
I tell you what, my list, I had three that came to me very quickly. I had four that came to me very quickly, but the fourth one was an honorable mention right away. I knew it wasn't going to make the top four list.
Oh, yeah, why?
Because there's one aspect I just don't like about it. Otherwise, and it's maybe more of a personal thing than it should be, but I had to fill in the number four. I had to think very hard because there's many others that I think would have tied for number four. And I had to...
Yeah, it's personal. It's not a subjective thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah, definitely. It makes it kind of fun. You know, we like a lot of different trees, but yeah, it's fun to pick four. So let's just get into it, I guess.
Sure. What's your one of your favorite
trees? My first, then we'll go your first. And again, these aren't in any particular order. This one is a New York State tree. It's also the West Virginia State tree. Go figure. And it's the sugar maple, also known as hard maple.
Well, I guess then I'll chime right in, and that's on my list as well.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of has to be if you're from the Catskill Mountains where you live in. And this is a cool tree. I mean, first of all, it grows in pure stands, which isn't like every tree out there. Basswood doesn't grow in pure stands. But there are some solid blocks of sugar maple. And really, to me, I didn't really know this at the time, but when I was little, it's one of my first memories of a tree, I would say. So I don't know about you, but...
Well, I mean, I paid attention to sugar maple very closely, starting in my mid-teens. That's when I started making maple syrup. I think that would be my first tree that I actually learned a lot about as far as the ecology of the tree. So that was definitely made the list right away, sugar maple.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember where I used to live in New Paltz. It was must have been late winter, and this is a kind of rare thing, but the sap was all over the bark of the tree, you know?
Okay.
But I remember it being somewhat viscous, which tells me it must have somehow, it must have been wounding along the tree or something, and then something that caused some evaporation where it became somewhat sticky, because my brother and I were like as most kids will do, they'll eat everything. But we were outside, and we're licking the bark, and I just remember, like, being in heaven, because it was really sweet, you know? And that was climbing all over that friggin' tree, man, you know, up in the branches and everything.
How big was this tree?
It's a big tree. I mean, I went back and looked at it 5 years ago to confirm it was a sugar maple. I know we moved when I was 13 from there and went back and asked the people if I could look at a few trees. And the one tree, I just knew where it was, and yeah, it was a sugar maple. So there's all sugar maples around it, and I don't know. I would say 14 to 18 inches, you know.
Yep.
Big enough.
Yeah, big enough where it was pretty tall still.
Yeah, but bushy. It's a bushy tree. You know, it's growing in the wide open.
Okay.
So definitely one of my first memories, and there's a guy down the road who was a science teacher for sixth grade. Mr. Thompson, and he would tap trees. He had a tubing system going throughout. So you would see that. And the nice thing about maple sugaring is that it's really easy as a kid to see that that comes from the forest, right? I mean, it's like, okay.
Yeah, if you're going to help with any part of the process, you're going to be in the woods with it.
Yeah, I feel like wood and maple syrup are pretty obvious to kids, you know? You can touch one and you can taste another. So... Fortunately, a lot of kids don't get to see wood, the manufacturing of it, which is kind of neat, because once you go to a sawmill, it's really an eye-opener, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, so that was that. And then in school, he wasn't my teacher, but he took the whole sixth grade out and tapped the tree in front of us. And, you know, you never know what kind of kids you're getting through. I know when I used to teach kids at Frost Valley Environmental Education, as an environmental educator, yeah, most of the kids always look like they're glazed over, you know, like kids do, and they're not paying attention. But there's always a few out there you know you're probably connecting with, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I definitely remembered it. But
yeah, as an example, the teacher that taught us in middle school how to tap a tree, I can think of five of the kids that were standing in that group now either work for a company or have worked for a company that's made maple syrup, or they're making maple syrup either in the backyard or a more commercial scale on their own.
Yeah.
And out of the group of 20 or so. So that was a pretty good group.
Yeah.
20%, 25%.
Oh, yeah. Then there's the leafers. I mean, the leaves is beautiful, right? The fall foliage of sugar maple. I mean, some of these trees... they're kind of hard to miss, especially when they're on the side of a road that's gray and dull, and you get this fiery golden foliage. You know, as a kid, you're like, damn, looks like sunlight coming out of the tree. You notice it. So that's kind of cool. Sometimes, though, you notice it in a way that others would make you notice it. You'd see a car, in New Paltz. You'd be driving down a road, and it's straight and flat. And up ahead, your eye's like, is that car parked in the middle of the road or just going slow? And this would happen a lot during the fall season. It would be a car parked on the state road, and you'd be like, what the heck are they looking at?
Uh-huh.
Why are they parked on the side in the road? And then as you go by them, of course the people driving, like my parents, are extremely pissed off because, it's an accident that's waiting to happen.
Sure.
So you go around them. And you have two parents that are really mad. But then you look inside and you see this whole family who is smiling and happy because they're looking at a maple tree on the side of the road. And you're like, oh, okay. So it's hard to be mad at people who are just, gawking at a maple tree. It can be done. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But, so that would get your attention.
You know where they get my attention is
the leafers.
Well, yeah, definitely in the fall, but I guess this again goes back to maple sugaring. I just pay attention to them on the hillsides in the spring. When they're all in flower, right as everything's leafing out, the maples will flower, and it creates this pale green in those pure stands.
Yeah.
And you can spot those sugar bushes way up on the mountainsides. And even though you'll likely never tap them or you'll never even walk up there to look at them, it's just awe-inspiring for me to just look at how much sugar maple is actually out there.
And, there's a ton of it.
And, where it is and who has it.
Well, we've talked about it before, but unbeknownst to a lot of people, New York State has the most potential taps on private land than any other state in the union, and Delaware County has the most in New York State, so,
Yeah, it's not hard to find a sugar maple.
Yeah, and Delaware County just has the right site out of the other counties because it's well-drained and calcium rich. But I would say the northern portion of Ulster is pretty much the same as Delaware County, so that's tons of sugar maple. And same thing with the western portion or northern portion of Sullivan, same thing again, green, same deal. So yeah, the Catskills are just rich in sugar maple, tons of it. It's pretty neat. I also like the bark of sugar maple. I think it's a pretty looking tree. The bark is kind of like this really light gray bark. I don't know.
What exfoliates is an older tree in these very big, big blocks or big furrows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And an old tree, you really look at them. And I like to look at some of the younger ones too, that, have a much lighter colored bark. Almost, some of them have almost a white colored bark in some situations. And yeah. I don't know if that's calcium driven or not. I know they're a calcium loving tree.
I've gotten asked by members, sometimes they think a disease is on the bark, and I'm like, no, it's just naturally occurring. I don't know why.
I know the trees we tapped in high school for the Delhi High School FFA, the whole sugar bush, there's about 500 taps up there. All of the trees are about 14 to 16 inches in diameter, and all of them are white in color. So something about that site really drives them to...
Well, speaking of sight, sugar maple is kind of cool to me because it also indicates a good site. It only grows on really well-drained sites. And, I would read books about when the settlers were coming into the Catskills or really the Northeast, and they would look for sugar maple because it would indicate a good site. So, it might not be great for growing, crops where there's no stones, but, trees and stuff, or even crops at first, because I'm sure it's full of so much deeper, that top O horizon of topsoil was probably deeper when they first started farming, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Sugar maple does not like wet feet, does not like too dry of feet. That's why the forest tent caterpillar, remember when it went through in 2007, 8, 9?
I do.
It Delaware County is probably more like 6 and 7, but it wreaked the most havoc on the ridgetops because they're less calcium rich up there, and those sugar maple were already kind of hanging on, and they got their butts whooped up there. But lower down on the slope, very rarely did they get their butts whooped by the caterpillar damage. or the worms, some people call them.
Right.
I don't know.
Got worm damage.
I'd always be like, what? Oh, yeah, okay.
Worms. You don't hear people talking about that as much, but definitely in the 5 years after that infestation, everybody talked about cutting their firewood in a worm kill spot.
Yeah.
But those trees that were killed then are now rotted.
It's when them government flies were released. The friendly flies, I guess they lay their eggs in the forest tent caterpillar. Somehow they kill them. I forget how. But I don't think the DC was releasing them. They're not as intricate as people think to release that many government flies that I know of. I don't know. Someone might correct me on it, but I used to work for the DC. I never heard of anyone releasing the government flies.
It was just the predator-prey thing. The prey was up, so the predators expanded their populations.
Yeah, the forest tent is from New York State. It is native to it, so... But, and also old sugar bushes, man, they're really cool. You know, if you go to a lot of these old farms in Delaware County, Ulster, or anywhere around here, you'll find really big, wolfy, old sugar maples. Some of them are so far gone that they're like dead skeletons on the ground, or they have no top that's alive. But that was the old sugar bush that you're looking at, and you can tell they're open grown because of their branch pattern is very wide. That's pretty neat. That's cool. That's cool history. And if you look really close, sometimes now it's state land. It's a wilderness area. But at one time, it was some guy's sugar bush, and you'll see stacked up rocks. I found that on a ridge between the Beaver Kill and Millbrook, and it was stacked up rocks and where there were sugar, and now it's totally state land.
Oh, where it was an old arch? Oh, okay.
You know, pretty cool.
Yeah, that's neat to find.
You know, so it was once a wilderness land. Was some guy's sugar bush.
Before that, an open field.
Yeah, before that, maybe an open field, right? Yeah, who knows? But, okay, what about some bad... Well, you got anything more to add about sugar maple you like?
You want to add bad things to sugar maple?
I got one bad thing. Yeah, I mean, some of these I do have some bad things. You know, some things... I got some critiques of sugar maple in case God's listening. He wants to make a little improvements, you know?
Okay, go for him.
All right. Sugar maple, the one problem with sugar maple, though... that I've come to not like, right? It's not all positive, John.
Okay.
It's an opposite twig pattern tree, like ash.
Yep.
Meaning the branches grow opposite one another. And they almost always, if they're growing in the open, if someone has them as a shade tree, they always have structural defects, tons of cracking where 2 liters are growing into each other. They just create a mess. I mean, it's just, they're a good shade tree, but they should be pruned from the start. And if you prune them from the start, they're fine. But if they're unpruned, there's always issues with sugar maple. The other thing I don't like about sugar maple is getting your line up in it. If you're an arborist and you're a tree guy and you're trying to climb up into the tree, those little bark crevices just grab your throw line, and that really makes you mad sometimes.
They get stuck up there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's just some things. I'm just going to point them out.
Well, I'm not a climber, but I totally agree with you on the defect thing. I think I've recommended cables and sugar maple more than any other tree species.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no doubt. Yeah. If they're pruned from the get-go, not a problem, you know. But, yeah, they always get that. And what happens is you get these long columns of decay where those tight crotches are. Water gets in there freezing. And then it just emanates throughout the trunk. And now you have an issue, you know.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Well, we got 3 more trees, man. So, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's show is just John and I, and we're talking about 4 favorite trees and more. You're just going to have to listen to find out what the other three are.
Was a cowboy I knew in South Texas. His face was burnt deep by the sun. Part history, part sage, part Mexican. He was there when Pancho Villa was young. And he'd tell you a tale of the old days.
when the country was wild all around. Sit out under the stars of the Milky Way and listen while the coyotes howl. And they go, woo-yip, woo-yip, woo. Hoodaloo-yip, now the longhorns are gone, and the drovers are gone, the Comanches are gone, and the outlaws are gone, Geronimo's gone, and Sam Bass is gone, and the lion is gone, and the red wolf is gone. Well, he cursed all the roads and the old men, and he cursed the automobile. Said this is no place for an hombre like I am, in this new world of asphalt and steel. Then he'd look off someplace in the distance at something only he could see. He'd say all that's left now of the old days, damned old coyotes and me. And they go, ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh, ooh. Now the longhorns are gone, and the drovers are gone, the Comanches are gone, the outlaws are gone, now Quantro's gone, Stanwante's gone, and the lion is gone, and the red wolf is gone. One morning they searched his adobe. He disappeared without even a word. But that night as the moon crossed the mountain, one more coyote was heard. And he'd go, ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip, ooh-yip, ooh. Ooh-yip,
yeah, my kids like that song.
I can see why.
They do the little...
I can picture them all just hooey-upping.
Play the coyote song.
That's what they call it?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a good one. So, we're talking about our four favorite trees on From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. And the first one was agreed upon. It's a consensus on sugar maple.
Yep, that made my list.
New York State tree. I don't know what other states besides West Virginia have it. I'm not sure. I was surprised West Virginia had it. You know? Southern state like that. But anyway, you know what? It does grow in the Appalachian spine more than some people think. I'll tell you what, it's growing in there, down there. I was there recently, and the mid and understory is becoming maple.
All right.
So, my second tree is Quercus rubra. That's
that was
Latin for red oak.
All right. Well, my list, it's hard for me to pick. So this is my number four. I just generically said all oaks. But if I had to choose, I was going to go with white oak.
Yeah, that's because you don't get to see white oak in Delaware County.
I think it's a gorgeous looking tree.
All right. So you know what? White oak is a really cool tree. The reason why I didn't pick white oak is because I don't like climbing in it.
Oh, well.
Because its bark is like sugar maple, and my throw line gets stuck on it, and I get cranky.
Well, red oak, you can probably climb easily because it's a smoother bark.
So red oak used to not be top four.
Oh, what changed?
Well, I started climbing trees. It's just such an easy tree to throw your line. It's got nice wide crotches, and there's nothing on it for your line to ever get snagged. And it almost wants to be climbed. And the branches are beautiful, like scaffold branches in a tree. And, it's, you know, squirrels like it because of the acorns, but I swear to God, they probably like climbing it too. You know, I think they're climbing in and they're like, and the branches are so big on a red oak throughout it. I feel like they look at it as like highways, you know?
They're
like, this is easy.
And they have such perpendicular crotches in some situations when they're open grown.
Yeah.
They have a very straight limb that comes straight out and reaches, like you said, like a highway for 10, 20 feet.
Now, the white oak has got some things going for it. I mean, the acorns are less tannic. They're still bitter, which means wildlife likes it more. So it's got a leg up there. And its form, if it's been, it's not as tolerant of shade, so it's got to be more open grown. But if it is open grown, I do agree that white oak can have a nicer form where the branches really spread.
Yeah, that's what gravitates me towards that tree is.
Yeah.
An open grown white oak is just such broad spreading wide branches. Doesn't get really tall. It's a perfect oval shape, and
you just don't find them that much anymore, though.
No, you don't. Like you said, if they're in any competition, even with other oaks, red oak especially, they're going to be in decline.
But now there's some red oaks I have seen in Westchester County. I went to a private school one time down there in 2007 or 8. They had me walk their property, and they had two-story colonial crowns on them, man. You know,
wow.
20 to 40 inches in diameter and tall, big crowns. I mean, that's cool, though. Red oak. I mean, it's serious, you know?
Yeah.
And there's one tree in Kerhonkson on one of our members' property. And this tree, I know, is about 90 feet tall, maybe 100 at the very tips. I know because I put my line up in there, and it's 75 foot is my line, and it wouldn't reach back down. I had to ascend down or ascend up. Otherwise, when I came down, I would be out of line, and you'd fall to 20 feet. But and it was just straight, you know. It wasn't even an open-grown tree. It was a forest tree. And just massive, you know. Pretty cool. You can't acorns, if you're a deer hunter, you're just going to gravitate towards oak trees, I think.
Oh, yeah. If there's a forest that only has a handful of oak trees, maybe 10 to 20 per 100 acres, and that's common in some parts of Delaware County and areas that just don't have a lot of oaks.
Yeah.
When they're masting and dropping acorns, then you know where to hunt.
I mean, I get hungry when I look at acorns, not because I want to eat acorns, but I look at those acorns, it's just another backstrap waiting for me.
Yeah, all right.
Hell yeah. So, you know, we're releasing them oak trees in the woods from maple that can be pretty pesky and weedy around oak trees. I just feel like, man, this is just future deer habitat we're creating, you know? So it can be really good, not to mention all the other wildlife. There's also something about an oak forest that's kind of cool, you know? Because of the way their crowns are, they let in more light, probably because the seedlings need a little more light than maple. So, it's not like this really dark forest, but usually kind of a little more open in sunlight, which is kind of a nice change. I'm not going to say I like it any more or less, but it's kind of a nice change.
Yeah, a little warmer on most days. One reason I gravitated more towards white oak is also because I've been milling a lot of lumber lately. Through CFA's portable sawmill program.
Yeah.
And the ray flecking that occurs in white oak is just some of the most gorgeous looking lumber I've seen. I would say that's one of my top three trees to produce lumber out of a mill.
That's one thing white oak's got. Yeah, it's also more resilient wood because it's waterproof.
Right, so red oak has porous end grain.
Yeah.
So it can't be used for something that might get wet.
But I think red oak looks nicer aesthetically, but I think white oak's more practical.
That's true. White oak has more of a gray color to it, so it's not as eye-catching
yeah.
in a piece of furniture. But like I said, when you can incorporate some of these like ray flecking and a quarter sawn piece, you can add back into that aesthetic appeal, and it's just gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, I got to get into the milling more. But firewood, when I do have to cut an oak, it's the best. There's no better firewood. I used to think beech was. No way. Beech is good because it, you know, it can season in 1 year. But if you have time with oak, it's 2 years, and white oak as well. It just splits so nicely. I'm surprised people don't talk about it more because it splits better than any other wood. It wants to split. It's a hard wood, but it just splits right around the grain.
Yep.
There's no stringiness to it like ash. Nothing like that. And when you cut a felt an oak tree, so easy to make the notch. It just cuts and saws nicely.
And it smells nice.
It smells nice. It wants to cut nicely. Whereas even red maple and sugar maple can sometimes be gnarly and have gnarliness to it when you're cutting it with a chainsaw, but never with oak. Oak is always cutting nice.
And when you split oak, even if you get into a crotch or a big knot, it splits around it. Like you just hit it hard enough, and you don't have to like exert too much energy, but you just hit it a little harder in that spot, and it's going to find its way through it.
Yeah.
Versus ash or some maple, it's just you get a knotty piece and have fun.
Absolutely. So, if you're getting into tree climbing, I recommend choosing an oak tree. Like I said, white oak is kind of like weird because, it has that bark that's very similar to sugar maple. If you're from Delaware County, you're not used to seeing white oak. You'll mistake it as a sugar maple at first. Also, another reason I like red oak is during deer hunting season if you have a portable tree climber.
Yeah.
And that tree, just like bitternut hickory or smooth bark hickory, is the best tree to go up. It's quiet in the morning, you know, when you're walking across that dark field and you're wondering, how many deer am I kicking out of this, right? Every sound is obnoxious. It's like a security alarm that just pisses you off. You got up really early in the morning and now you're walking across this, you know, a piece of woods or field and just thinking you're waking up everything. And finally, you get to your tree. And, of course, it gets really quiet. And hopefully you're setting up your tree climber quietly. And there's nothing worse than going up white oak like I used to or shagbark hickory when I first started hunting. That's really stupid.
That's not a good idea.
I remember doing that one time. I was like, okay. It just woke up
everything. I did that with black cherry once, too.
Same thing, man. Forget it. Don't even try it. But smooth bark hickory or red oak is so nice, you don't hear anything, especially with them lone wolf tree climbers.
Another time we wish we were sponsored.
Oh, I know.
That's a great tree stand.
It's really nice. So another way. And the thing is, and I've killed a lot of deer, but on that smooth bark hickory surrounded by red oaks, a lot of those deer are coming in because they're eating off the acorns. It's a twofer. So that's a good spot over there. So that's another reason. What else we got for red oak? I think that's about it. But so that's two. That's sugar maple, and that's red oak for top two. And we got two more. Two more, right? Now we'll take a break. We'll talk about the next two in the last 20 minutes.
Sure.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze. And skipping over the ocean like a stone. I'm going where the sun
pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
As David Allan Coe says, it's not a country song, John, unless it has trucks, trains, rain, mama, and getting drunk.
Did that song have that?
Had rain.
Oh, okay.
Does that make it a country song? I mean, he's not really a country singer, but
I guess it's
kind of gets into the genre if you talk about rain.
Well, I guess it's 1/5 country.
Yeah, but why trains? I don't know. Mm. A lot of country songs do mention trains.
Well,
and rain.
A lot of trains out west.
Yeah, I guess so. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest and with Ryan and John every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is 4 favorite trees and more. I don't know if we'll get to more tonight. But the first two for me was sugar maple and red oak.
Mine was sugar maple and white oak. So we're similar thoughts here.
All right. Okay. My third, and again, this is in no specific order, is Suga canadensis, which is the mighty eastern hemlock.
We differ.
What?
I said we differ.
Okay.
On our number three, but that's a great choice.
So what is it?
Mine was black walnut.
Nice. Hey, that's a good tree, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I like it for a lot of reasons, but I've becoming, in the last year and a half, I've learned more about black walnut than I ever have, and I've worked with it. I've trimmed out my entire bathroom with black walnut, and I get to look at it every day.
This is a beautiful wood. I was just coming up through the Delaware Water Gap.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever want to see some black walnut, there is a lot of it down in Delaware Water Gap.
Okay.
It likes deep alluvial soils, and that's what it's got. So it grows like a weed down there. Man.
I tell you, when you find it, especially in a river valley like that, or just any river valley where it's growing, it seems to be very weedy, even amongst itself.
Pure stands.
Yeah, exactly. Another one of pure stands.
Well, it gives out that natural juglone, which is a chemical, and kills other trees.
Yep.
And if it grew like a pure stand, I would tap it if I could find it up here.
Right.
It
is a tappable tree. I actually thought ahead so far in my life. I planted 12 of them in hopes that I one day may tap them.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I had the syrup one time at the maple conference. It's very good. It's table syrup. It's not like, you know, like that birch syrup.
Birch syrup, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That stuff's for cooking.
Yeah.
I think. My opinion. Anyway, the hemlock. I like the hemlock. There's something about a hemlock forest that is just absolutely beautiful. I mean, very mysterious. Maybe it comes back from how we were raised. You know, the whole Hansel and Gretel thing and dark forest and mysterious kind of thing that a lot of us grow up with. I don't know. It also has a very historical significance in the Catskill Mountains. You know, the tanning industry is the first industry of the Catskill Mountains. And you can't really talk about Catskill's history without talking about the tanning industry.
Right. Well, how vast was it?
Oh, it was extremely vast. But how vast? I don't know. According to Dr. Michael Kudish, a huge significant portion of the Catskills below 2,200 feet in elevation, which is where most human beings live, was taken up by hemlock, you know?
Yeah.
And where I live today in Sampsonville, had a huge tannery on it. And most of the leather, Civil War, is made from Catskill tanneries, you know, from the bark, you know. So a lot of these towns started from it. Coshecton, Sampsonville, Palinville, Tannersville, you know, and DeBruce, which is where we just were, right?
Right.
That was the biggest one, the Catskills.
And these towns, I've learned that the their populations peaked around the tanning industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the many of thousands.
Thousands of people in Sampsonville, supposedly.
And how many is there today?
I don't know.
Hundreds, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, there's not even a post office.
Right.
The post office went defunct in the 1980s. And unfortunately, now my post office is Olive Bridge, which is 6 to 8 miles away. But, yeah, the other thing is it's one of the best places to camp, too. If you're looking for a campsite, look for a hemlock stand because it's litter-free for the most part. You know, the acidic needles keep out other regeneration. And I don't know. It's nice, too, when you come up and when you're bushwhacking in the Catskill Mountains and you're getting hit in the face for acres from American Beach and you see a lot of blackbirch saplings and you just can't see in front of you very far. And then you come to a hemlock stand. It's kind of nice. It's a nice reprieve from that, you know. You can take a break, eat lunch there. Sometimes you get lucky because deer find it as a wintering yard and you shoot one, you know. But, you know, but yep. Yeah, it's a nice cool place in the summertime. And it's a nice warm place in the wintertime, ironically, you know, because the wind is kind of, you're protected from the wind, which is why the deer seek it out, I think, in both instances.
Yeah, and if there's snow cover around you, there's always less underneath the hemlock stand.
Yeah. So there is that. Also, you know, these bark peelers, man, I mean, just think about the lifestyle they must have lived. Paul Misko has been on the show before, talked about the history of the tanning industry in Woodland Valley, another place. You know, he's done a lot of research on it up there in Woodland Valley, and you know, you can find Civil War button he found one time of on the old roads there where some guy came back from the Civil War still working as a bark peeler. He's found, I think it was clamshells, and he's found the actual receipts where the guy who owned the tannery, would bring his workers clamshells all the way up there, up in the woods.
Wow.
Oxen shoes or whatever, I don't know. Usually a lot of these bark roads would follow the old stream beds because they need to feed the animals water, which makes sense once you think about it, you know.
Yeah.
You need to feed them something. Yeah. They got to drink.
Cows drink a lot of water.
You can find the old bark shanties, which we have, and trace the fire to where it burned from. We know there's a fire there, and the fire burns uphill. And but just think about it. This is a summertime thing, so these guys would come in the summertime, live there for weeks or months in a little cabin, peeling bark, you know, from end of May, Memorial Day, to August. It's when the bark peels. So.
And you you make your own Catskill Mountain leather out of tanned hemlock.
Yes. So I take the deer that I get during the year and freeze the hides, and then in the summertime thaw them out and flesh them. And there's, you know, step-by-step kind of process, but you put it, right now I got two soaking in hemlock bark and chestnut oak bark. And it's pretty neat, you know, to watch the hide go from being a bloody mess to something that actually looks really nice. You know?
Well, you can wear it and use it.
Yeah. Gotten some vests made out of it. And it's really nice stuff. And it's what they would call veg tanned or vegetable tanned. And it's pretty neat, you know. So it actually puts on weight, the hide, you know, because it fixes those tannins and gets heavier. But so we want to say about black walnut, because we still got a fourth tree. What the heck?
Well, I'll be quick. I mean, we already talked a little bit about it, but like I said, the one of the most surprising things about it that most people don't see, because they see the finished product of black walnut in a, whether it's a table or any type of furniture or gun stock, is it's got two colors. The sapwood is a bright white color, especially when you first mill it. Over time, they sort of blend together. And Gary Mead on this show once taught us that if you soak it in water, you can blend the two together and get more of an even brown color throughout. But the heartwood is a very, very dark color. That's why they call it black walnut. And so when I'm doing anything with it, and I have in my bathroom, like I said, I mix the two together. So it's a modeling effect of black and a lighter color.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty underestimated grain pattern. It looks really cool.
Well, hey, man, it's not that underestimated. People used to jack it with helicopters and stuff.
Well, no, I'm saying the black walnut, the modeling of the two, the sapwood and the heartwood together. Because, you're right.
Highly sought after.
Highly sought after. It's extremely valuable. Extremely valuable. Up to 10 times more than some other woods that are even common. So, if you have a black walnut, don't let it go to firewood. It's not worth it unless it's totally rotted or something.
We cut down a huge one over there in Ulster County.
Yeah, we did.
Kingston, Rosendale.
And we utilized the whole thing, most of the branch wood. We got like 1,700 board feet out of that tree,
which
is a lot.
I just want to say one quick thing about hemlock, and I'm not going to get into it, but I can't think of hemlock without thinking of brook trout and vice versa. So, I mean, a nice brook trout stream has hemlock on it.
Yeah, you're right about that.
So I'll just say that real quick. And the last tree for me is Malus. Apple.
We agree again.
Yeah. I mean, I was down south recently, and they don't have apple trees as much growing down there. Not wild. Up here in the Catskill Mountains, that stuff grows like a weed at one time, and maybe it's because it's less humid or something. I don't know, but it's an agricultural legacy, you know, from when the farms were around, and come to really like apple. Now, when you first climb into an old apple tree that's 30 feet tall, it doesn't want you to climb into it. It wants to kick you in the face, and when it's a cold day, it wants to bust you in the lip, and you want to cry like a little kid, hit you right on the end of the nose that's cold.
Yep, been there.
It doesn't want you to be in there, but once you prune it out, it's kind of a nice tree to climb in, and it's very rewarding. I mean, it gives you back pretty good. I mean, one tree can give you 20 to 50 gallons of cider if it's a big old standard variety.
Yeah, I just recently planted 4 in my yard, so I'm looking for the future on those, along with a black walnut.
It's a high-maintenance tree. You know, everything wants to kill it. Diseases want to kill it at first, and voles, and deer, and bear. But once it gets going, if you prune it, and it wants to be pruned, then it'll give back. But at first, it's stubborn. But then it's stubborn about dying.
I know.
It will not die once it's established.
We look at some of these trees, and they are 2 feet in diameter, which is big for an apple, and receding back to just this main part of the stem, a few suckers, and it's still vigorous and trying to grow.
So what one arborist called plasticky, meaning we can really hit it hard and it will sprout back, and it's very forgiving. Whereas, you know, you hit a maple tree like that hard and you might just kill it and shock it. But apple, you got to really, it's forgiving. I've seen people do some crazy things to apple trees, including us, and and the tree survives. Sometimes not, but you know, it's really rewarding. Its bark is kind of cool too. You know, I can't describe it. It's just a mottled, papery, not papery, but it's just a weird bark pattern.
Well, and there's so many variations in it too, between maybe a cultivated or a volunteer tree, or all the volunteers combined. There's just so many different bark patterns you can see that are all still very similar.
Yeah.
You can smoke with the wood. I tell you what, you do smoked trout with apple wood. It is good.
Very good.
Versus something like a red meat wood is more like a hickory. Hickory has more of an acidic flavor to it. So apple pairs really well with that, with fish.
A lot of uses for the wood. If you have to burn it for firewood, it's one of the hardest woods there is. It's right up there with shagbark, hickory, and black locust. They're like neck and neck.
Apple is another log that I've milled recently that I fell in love with.
Yeah.
The contrast between the heartwood and the sapwood. So it's got the bright, bright white sapwood with a reddish color heartwood. And the two that paired together look so cool.
Very cool tree. And got about two, three minutes, but I would say honorable mention for me is the mulberry tree.
Okay.
White and red.
Okay.
I know a lot of people are, oh my God, the white invasive white mulberry. You know what? I like white mulberry. In fact, if I had to pick one, I'd go with white mulberry just because it's a tougher, cold, hardier tree that'll grow in the crack of a pavement and produce fruit without any fertilizers or pesticides or anything. I say, okay, you want to grow? I say grow.
My honorable mention, which should make the list one day, I hope. But there's one reason why right away I couldn't do it, and that's sycamore.
Yeah, that was up there for me.
Was it?
Yeah.
As far as aesthetic appeal, it's one of the coolest looking trees you're going to find of the larger trees. Just the camouflage, snow camo looking bark is the coolest thing about it. But where it grows, you'll find it in the rockiest, stoniest riverbank and getting beat up by high water. It just wants to grow. It's a cool tree in that respect.
Yeah.
But supposedly you can make butterscotch flavored syrup from it, and I have yet to accomplish that. So that's why it went lower on the list for me, because I have countless hours trying and it didn't work out.
Yeah, and sycamore will grow literally in a shale mine.
I know. Gravel bank.
Gravel bank. Literally where a guy's harvesting it over in Accord area. I know of it. Or stream bank. So, yeah. But it's definitely a tall tree, man. Wide spreading. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And that bark is, you can't mistake it.
No way.
A lot of people I've had a few people in the past ask me, they don't even know it's a sycamore. They just describe the bark.
Yeah.
And want to know what it is. And people are paying attention to it. So
pretty cool tree. That's all the time we have on From the Forest. And every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soul,